of Reuben's alarm. Joseph did have enough sense and understanding not to appear at once before his brothers in the coat, though he had the greatest desire to do so. A faint doubt whether they really did love him so much more than themselves that they would have no other feeling than pure joy at his elevation made him lay aside the garment for the time and greet them in his everyday clothes. "Greetings, dear sons of Leah, brothers and strong men," he addressed them. "Welcome to our father's house. A few of you at least I will kiss." And he went among them and kissed three or four on the shoulder, they standing like images and not touching him at all, save Reuben, now a man of 29 years. Without any particular change of feature, he lifted one heavy hand when he felt Joseph's kiss on his shoulder and stroked the lad's hair lightly, almost furtively. He was tall and heavy and wore a skin apron with leather straps wound round his powerful legs. His face was red, clean-shaven, fleshy, and muscular. It had a pugnacious expression, yet the rather blunt profile suggested both dignity and self-consciousness. His low brow was darkened by a mop of curly black hair. Jehuda, the next elder son, but 3 years younger than Reuben, was quite as tall, but walked with a stoop, and showed traces of suffering about his nostrils and lips. He wore a cloak, in which he wrapped his hands, and a close-fitting cap, from which a shock of red-brown hair streamed out like a mane. Red-brown, too, was the heavy, pointed beard, and the narrow, drooping mustaches that covered the thick red lips. These last spoke of sensuality, but the nose, finely shaped and delicately arched, which drooped over them, suggested some gift of the spirit. While the eyes, large and prominent and heavy-lidded like a stag's, had a melancholy cast. Like several of his brothers and half-brothers, Judah was already a married man. Reuben, for instance, had wooed a daughter of the soil, and with her raised up several children to Abram's God, among them the lads Hanok and Palu, whom Jacob sometimes trotted on his knees. Simeon had married a maid of Shechem, named Buna, carried off as booty when they had sacked the town. Levi, a worshipper of Yahoo, who passed for a grandchild of Eber. Naphtali, a young female whose origin Jacob somewhat arbitrarily derived from Nahor, brother of the Chaldean. And Dan, quite simply, a Moabite woman. It would not have been possible to compass marriages entirely irreproachable from the religious point of view, and in Judah's case, Jacob had perforce to be satisfied with any which might bring the youth some tranquilizing and steadying influence. For his sex life had from the first been marked by disorder and suffering. His relations with the love goddess kept him strained and unsatisfied. He writhed beneath her lash, and was her unsubmissive slave. Hence the deep conflict in his soul, and the lack of unity in his character. His intercourse with the consecrate and the whores in the temples of Ishtar brought him into contact with the follies and abominations of the worship of Baal, and the shamelessness of Canaan. And nobody, not even Jacob himself, could find that more repugnant than did Judah, he being of a religious temperament, seeking a pure and reasoned worship, and from the bottom of his heart abominating Sheol and the follies and mysteries with which the folk defiled themselves. Moreover, he felt he had good reason to think well of himself, for since the stumbling of Reuben and the night when the twins had plundered Shechem, there was something to be said for the view that Judah, the fourth son, was next in line for the blessing and the bearer of the promise. Of course, these things were not said among the brethren, no claims being put forward save in the form of their common ill will against Rachel's son. Through one of his shepherds, named Hira, from the village of Adullam, Judah had got to know a Canaanite man called Shua, and Shua's daughter found favor in his eyes. He married her with Jacob's consent. Up to now she had borne him two sons, whom he brought up in the fear of God. But just as Ishmael had resembled Hagar, so these sons were like their mother, and not like their father. At least Judah thought and said so, saying that they were an evil generation, children of Canaan, of the bad breed of Baal, Sheol, and Melech, though it was possible that the trouble was not all of Shua's daughter's making. She was now pregnant with a third child, and Judah already looked forward with misgivings to its appearance. In short, The shadow of melancholy lay in Judah's eyes. But that did not make him better-natured, nor lead him to stroke Joseph's hair as Reuben had done. He said, "Well, writing man, is it seemly of thee to come thus before thy elders in an ordinary smock full of ink-spots? They having been long away, and now are returned home? Carest thou so little to please us, when thou art so ready to curry favor among common folk with fine garments? We hear thou hast fine and dazzling raiment in thy chest, worthy of a prince's son. Wouldst thou insult us by being so niggardly with it at our homecoming?" Next spoke Simeon and Levi, the twins, leaning upon their heavy cudgels. Their eyes were hot, their tattooed breasts glistened with oil, their whole bodies were marked with scars. They burst out together into a short, bellowing laugh. Said one, "Since when do wantons walk about unveiled?" And the other, "How long since have the temple whores ceased to cover their eyes?" He spoke unmindful of Judah, who started at the words. "Oh, thou meanest my picture robe," questioned Joseph. "Hath our brother Naphtali told thee on the way how your father Jacob hath had his heart moved toward me? But in thy goodness, forgive my lack." And he made the most charming obeisance before them all, with his arms crossed. "It is hard," said he, "to hit upon the right thing in doing and in leaving undone. And whatever he doth, a man falleth into sin. I thought in my folly, shall I spread myself before my elders? No, for I should come before them in humility, so that they take no umbrage at my arrogance, but love me instead. And lo, I have done foolishly, for I hear that I should have made myself fine in your honor. But believe me, on the evening of the roast meal, when you have washed yourselves and put on feast-day garments, I will sit on Jacob's right hand in my ketonet, and you shall see our father's son in all his glory. Shall it be a promise?" Again the savage twins gave a roar of laughter, and the others bored deep into his eyes, trying to distinguish between simplicity and impudence in what he had said, and not succeeding. "A golden promise," said Zebulun. He was the youngest, and tried to look like a Phoenician. His beard was trimmed to a round shape, and he had a mop of short curls. His upper garment was patterned in gay colors, and ran over one shoulder and under the other, showing the undershirt. His mind was set on the sea, so that he had liefer not been a shepherd. "A delicious promise, like a sacrificial cake of fine meal made with honey, a promise which I should like to thrust back down thy throat, that thou mightst choke upon it." "Come, come, Zebulun, these are but coarse jests," Joseph replied, casting down his eyes and smiling as though embarrassed. "Hast thou heard them from the galley-slaves at Gaza and Ascalon?"
"He hath called my brother Zebulun a drunken galley-slave," said Issachar, 21 years old, tall and heavy-limbed, nicknamed the Bony Ass. "Reuben, thou hast heard, and thou must take it up, if not with thy fist, as I could wish, yet with such words as shall make him remember."
"Thy words are inexact, Issachar," Reuben replied, in the high, effeminate voice which men of his powerful build may sometimes have. "He hath not called him that, but merely asked if he heard the words from such a one. It was pert enough as it was. I understood him to say that he would like to choke me with the sacrificial cake," put in Joseph, "which would have been blasphemous to boot, as well as very unfriendly. But if he did not say that or mean it, then, of course, I will take back what I said, too." "And now," concluded Reuben, "let us go our ways, that our coming together may not end in tauntings and misunderstanding." They separated, the 10 and the 1. But Reuben followed Joseph and called him by name. He stood before him, just they two alone, Reuben on his leather-bound legs like heavy columns, and Joseph gazing up with polite attention into the hard-fleshed face, which expressed both embarrassment and dignity, since he was conscious both of his strength and of his proneness to err. His eyes, with their inflamed lids, were close to Joseph's. They lost themselves in Joseph's face, or rather they stopped at it and returned into themselves. He kept kneading his brother's shoulder with his powerful right hand,
as he was wont to do when he talked with anyone. "Thou keepest the robe, young one?" asked he, moving his lips, but scarcely opening his mouth.
"Yes, Reuben, my lord, I will keep it," answered Joseph,
"for Israel hath given it me, when he was merry from play."
"Did he defeat thy men?" Reuben asked. "Thou playest shrewdly and discreetly, for thou art practised by Eliezer in all sorts of mental exercise which can stand thee in good stead in a game. Doth he often win?"
"Now and again," Joseph said, showing his teeth.
"When thou wilt?"
"It doth not depend on me alone," replied the other evasively.
"Yes, yes, so is it," thought Reuben to himself, and his gaze grew even more brooding. "That is the deceitfulness of the blessing-bearer, and his way of deceiving. He must hide his light under a bushel, that it light him not to his harm, and the others must boast of more light than they have in order to keep up with him."
He looked at his half-brother.
"Rachel's child," he thought. "What charm he hath! The people are right to smile upon him. He is precisely tall enough, and casteth up his lovely eyes at me, and mocketh within himself, of that I am certain, as I stand here before him like a tower, disproportioned, tall, and unwieldy, with this loutish body of mine, the veins of it fairly bursting with strength, so that I forgot myself like a young bull with bilha, not even looking to see if we were alone. Then with innocent malice Joseph goeth and telleth Jacob, and I am undone. For he is wise as the serpent, and gentle as the dove. And thus one should be, malicious in his innocence, and innocent in his malice, so that innocence becometh a danger, and malice a sign of grace. And these are the unmistakable marks of the blessing, and one could do naught against it even if one would. And one would not at all, for there is God. With a single blow I could stretch him out upon the earth so that he rose not again. The strength that overcame Bilhah were enough for that, and the thief of my firstborn right should feel it as a man, even as Bilhah felt it as a woman. But what would that avail me? Abel would lie slain, and I should be he whom I understand not, that is, Cain. For how can one act against his conviction, and open-eyed strike down the pleasing one, because one is oneself unpleasing? I will deal not against mine own conviction. I will be fair and just, as is more conformable to my soul. I shall betray it in nothing. I am Reuben, my veins full of strength, Leah's firstborn, Jacob's eldest son, and head of the 12. I will make no lovesick faces at him, nor humble myself before his charms. It was silly of me even to have stroked his hair. Silly and weak! I will lay no hand upon him one way or the other. I stand before him like a tower, clumsy if you like, but in dignity."
The muscles of Reuben's face were drawn as he asked, "Thou hast wheedled the coat out of him, hast thou not?"
"He promised it me of late," answered Joseph, "and when I reminded him of the promise, he gave it to me out of the coffer and said, 'Keep it, keep it.'"
"Ah, so thou hast reminded him and begged him for it. He gave it thee against his will, tempted by thine. Knowest thou that it is against God to misuse the power that is given thee, so that he willeth unjustly, and doth what he regretteth?"
"What power have I over Jacob?"
"Thou liest in asking, for thou hast over him Rachel's power."
"Then have I not stolen it,
nor earned it?"
"The Lord saith, I favor whom I favor."
"Thou art impudent," Reuben said, with drawn brows, shaking him slowly to and fro as he held him by the shoulder. "It is said of me that I am unstable as water, and that sin is not far from me. But what is far from me is impenitent frivolity like unto thine. Thou boastest of thy God, and fleerest at the heart that lieth in thine hand. Dost thou know that thou hast brought the old man into anguish and stress by beguiling him of the coat?"
"Into what sort of stress, big Reuben mine?"
"I know already thou liest, since thou askest. Hast thou then such joy in being able to do this? in stress over thee, who art his dearest without desert, according to the wish of his heart that is so proud and yet so soft. He was blessed before Esau his twin, yet hath he not suffered enough, in that Rachel died a furlong from Ephron, and in the matter of Dinah his child, and even through me, which I mention myself, seeing that thou wast about to remind me. Not so, big Reuben, for I had not in mind that day when thou didst sport with Bilhah, so that thou wast to the father in his wrath like to a hippopotamus. Hold thy tongue. How canst thou mention it, when I took it out of thy mouth and set it before thee? Always thou thinkest of new sorts of lies, saying thou thinkest not thereupon, when thou expressly speakest of it. Is it that which thou learnest from the tablets of stone, and connest when thou and Eliezer study the wisdom of the temple? Thy lips move, I know not how, having been carved in this wise by the Creator, and thy teeth glisten between them. But the words that come forth are naught but insolence. Have a care, my young one, he said, and held him so that Joseph rocked to and fro on heels and toes. Have I not saved thee 10 times out of the hands of the brethren, and from the wrath of those who trod Shechem under their feet for the sake of the ravished one? 10 times and more, when they would have given thee a good pummeling for telling tales to the father about cutting pieces from the living flesh, and more of the same sort? And for that thou wouldst go and beguile our father of the coat, while we are pasturing far away, and wouldst in thy folly defy the wrath of 9 brothers, if not 10? Tell me who thou art, and how much is thine arrogance, that thou makest thyself different from us all, and walkest as one set apart? Fearest thou not that thy conceit will draw down about thee the dark clouds out of which the lightning striketh? Hast thou no gratitude at all for those who mean kindly by thee, that thou causest them anguish? Thou art as one who climbeth high in rotting branches, and laugheth at those who stand beneath, and call to him in fear, lest the branch break, and he fall, and his bowels gush out. Put me down upon the ground, Reuben, and hearken to what I say, for I am grateful that thou speakest a word for me against the brethren's ill will, and I am grateful, too, that thou holdest me thus and shakest me about both together. But now set me upon my feet that I may speak. I cannot collect my thoughts, being so shaken about. But now, standing here upon my feet, I will collect them, and sure am I that thou wilt in thy justice grant me right. I have not got the coat by stealth or stealing, for he promised it to me by the well, and ever since I have known of his purpose to give it to me, to keep. But as I saw him, our gentle-hearted father, somewhat at odds with his own will, I held to what he had said, and easily got him to give it to me. Give, I say, and not present, for mine it was before he gave it me. How so thine? Thou askest? I will answer. For who was it from whom Jacob first lifted the veil, and made a promise concerning it at that hour? It was Leah. Yes, actually it was, but in deeper truth it was Rachel. Leah was only arrayed in it, but Rachel was the owner of the robe, and she kept it to her death, a furlong from Ephron. But since she died, where is she now?
Where the earth is her portion.
Yes, actually, again, but in very truth it is otherwise. Knowest thou not that it is in the power of death to change the sex, and that Rachel still liveth for Jacob, though in another form?
Reuben started back.
I and my mother are one, Joseph said. Knowest thou not that Mami's garment is likewise her son's, and that they wear it by turns, one in the other's place? Name her, and thou namest me. Name what belonged to her, and thou namest what is mine. Well then, whose is the veil?